Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The McNeil and Parkin Show. Afternoons on The Score.
This hour on The Score brought to you by Team Hochberg. Visit their new website, 56david.com. That's 56david.com. Colic and cowlick. Two different words. The more you know.
I didn't know it. Thank God Chris Tannehill's here. I say it every morning when I wake up. I'm blessed to work with that man every day. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't know the difference between a colic and a cowlick.
A colic is like a pain in the bowels. Yeah, babies get them. And then a cowlick.
Well, I think everybody gets those, right? At some point, you eat the wrong thing.
The chefs.
Some of us, three or four times a show.
That's exactly right. And then a cowlick is when some of your hair stands up in a different direction, like a cow licked your hair.
Is that a common problem?
That's how people describe it online. That's how you
how it got its name, huh?
That's how it's spelled. Okay. Cowlick.
That's kind of what my hair looks like, and thank you to my wife for pointing out that your hair looked okay today.
Yeah.
And now you know what I live with every day when my hair usually doesn't look anywhere near okay.
She just said it with such genuine surprise. She's like, huh, hair looks nice. Like, this is a genuine shock that I could look like a put-together adult. You know, that's the standard, apparently, that I've set around the office. It's good.
She's really in that nesting motherly stage already.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Super patronizing.
Your hair doesn't actually look good.
Yeah.
She's bringing everyone else up, right? That's what she's trying to do. Is, hey, you look passable today. Congratulations.
Yeah, wow. Look at you.
You look like a somewhat functioning member of society.
It's not humiliating that you catch a paycheck from this company. Congratulations on being an adult. Kind of. Texter writes in asking, because we were talking about laziness and how I don't like to bring a second bag, which is why any single bag, so everything's got to fit in my pockets, or I put my sunglasses on my shirt collar or whatever. Texter says, is it lazy if I leave my clothes in the dryer and just pluck them out to wear each day of the week until it's empty? Yes. Yes, it is. That's admirably lazy. What do you think the laziest thing is that you do?
Laziest thing that I do.
What's the laziest thing?
To the texter's point, one of the biggest annoyances I have, like this is long before even homeownership, it's folding laundry. Is just I can sort through the laundry, colors go here, the whites go there, and it's sorted all out, and I can do laundry all day. But when it comes to folding laundry, like, I would rather do any yard work, rather do damn near anything in a house than actually fold shirts or fold socks or fold whatever the heck piece of clothing. It drives me crazy.
Do you fold your boxers or briefs, or do you just shove them in the drawer?
Boxers I fold. Boxer briefs I fold. Socks I roll up in balls, but I don't like actually. Or those are the ones that are not organized whatsoever.
It just throws
them in the bin, and it's fine. Doesn't matter what I'm wearing, for the most part, on my feet or on my...
It drives Steph absolutely insane that I don't fold my boxers. And I'm like, I don't understand what the issue is. You're the only person who sees them. Like, if they're a little wrinkled, as long as they're clean...
Right. As long as I'm not wearing the ones from 3 days ago, I think you're okay.
I mean, there was a point in my life where I would rather buy new boxers than do my own laundry.
And that's the way I am with socks.
Yeah.
Because no matter how many times I wash socks... For whatever reason, socks just disappear in the washer or dryer. I swear to God. Like,
yeah,
they're just gone.
Yeah,
like,
they
where
disappear.
Is the other sock? I put it in the hamper. Where did it go? And it just is such a nuisance of like, okay, where's its twin? Where's the matching sock? I'd just rather go buy a bag of new socks. I am entirely with you.
The idea, though, of just leaving your clothes in the dryer and then wearing them straight out of the dryer, that's going to lead to a bad wrinkled situation of things other than socks and boxers.
Does the texture then have to, like, throughout the week have to go put it on de-wrinkle for 20 minutes before he puts on his new clothes?
Although the perk of that would be you're always wearing warm clothes.
That's true.
Right? I like putting on pants right when they're out of the dryer. It's a nice feeling.
It's like literal hot pants.
This guy over
it
here.
Is.
Man, really, it is the bye week. You don't need a schedule to know that.
I'm just saying, like, what's the laziest thing you do? We're getting some pretty good suggestions. So NIU Dave texts in, you guys should do a laziness draft, but I don't feel like sending you mine. That's pretty good.
Not bad.
You're too lazy to send them in. Texting your wife downstairs when she's upstairs. That's just convenience.
Yeah.
I feel like everybody does that.
I think so, too, because like in our house, where the kitchen is and where the bedroom are, the bedroom's upstairs, kitchen's downstairs, you could not be further away, and there's no good way to be able to hear. So there'll be times that like I'll look down at my phone and be like, are you just ignoring me? Like, no, I'm not ignoring you. I literally cannot hear you. I'm not ignoring you whatsoever. Like, oh, I've been shouting your name for 10 minutes. Like, well, sorry.
Yeah, well, and then also if you text someone from the other room and they don't respond and then they get mad at the non-response, it's like, it is possible that I just wasn't looking at my phone.
Mm-hmm.
It is possible that I'm not doing this intentionally to ignore you. Texter says that they do that dishwasher the laundry move out of the dryer with dishes.
I'm guilty of that.
Yeah,
I'm guilty of that. Like
that's
dishwasher,
the best way to do it.
Run the dishwasher on a Monday, and it's still the clean dishes are sitting in there on Thursday afternoon.
Yeah, and then it starts to pile up
in
the sink.
As guilty as anybody. Why is there all the dirty dishes in the sink? Well, the ones in the washer are clean. Then why don't you put them away? Because I don't want to.
Yeah.
Pretty much, that's all I got for you.
I got no problem with the laziness aspect of that. Sean Anderson has confirmed that Jack McDowell is going to join us tomorrow at 5:30. So nice job, Sean. That'll be exciting to talk to the former Cy Young winner. And why do we want to talk to Black Jack McDowell? Well, not only because to get stories from back in the day, not only because he was a great member of the White Sox, but when David Sampson went on the Lebatard podcast and told the story about Reinsdorf, and then he was on with Mullin Haw today, we'll play that in a second, Black Jack McDowell said he heard the same thing that Jerry Reinsdorf told him. Also, that he didn't want to, not that he didn't want to win, but that the goal was to finish second every year. So let's hear from David Sampson, former president of the Marlins, baseball executive, who says bombastic things. He's a good guest on Miami radio and occasionally national radio. He throws a lot of things out there. This is a secondhand account, obviously, of a conversation from a long time ago. But here's the former baseball executive with Mullin Haw today.
The story is true, and I don't find it to be a bad story. Listen, here's the thing. Tanking only became a thing after I got into baseball. I always thought that it was a great plan to keep trying and to never be really bad and to keep looking like and hoping that you can make it and win a division or become a wild card. And only later, when the Astros started it and lost 100 games 3 years in a row, and even then, I didn't agree with that plan because it was brutal when the Astros were losing all those games, and it was hard for any owner to take that. So I don't see anything wrong with what he told me. But the fact is, when he told me that the White Sox had finished in second place 4 years in a row, right before he told me that, you have to look at revenue, and you can't expect him to lose money running a team. You shouldn't have to lose money running a team. And when he is building the White Sox and trying to win, you also have to be realistic. And so he has not done anything, in my opinion, that would make him a bad owner or a cheap owner at all. I know that that is not the case. So I have nothing but respect for him. Now, the story is the story, and the story is real, and here's why I was disappointed that he said he didn't recall it. I guess that's not a denial of it. I don't recall what I did yesterday, so I get that. But from a strategic standpoint, that was the thing to do back then. I don't think he would say that now, which he agreed that he doesn't say that now. And right now, the White Sox, to me, are rebuilding. This is an important offseason for them as they decide how far they're going to rebuild or whether they're going to start it back up. If things hit right and you are competing and finishing in second place, you have a chance. Now, let's look at what's happened in Chicago as an example. All the buildup to the Cubs winning the World Series in 16, it was like a fever pitch. And you can't tell me that in Chicago there's the same feeling, the same anxiety, the same anticipation about a second World Series as there was about a first. Do you agree with that at least?
That's true.
Interesting on a number of levels there. It was a compelling interview. Good job by Mullin Haw to get it. I do think that part of the pressure, though, on that point at the end, I mean, Joe Maddon doesn't have a job for life in this town because there has been so much pressure and expectations to win another one. Now, is it the same as ending the longest drought in American sports? Obviously not. That was a historic World Series title. But the Cubs dominate coverage in this town at the Tribune on this radio station. Like, the idea that there is not a high standard or an expectation to win another World Series for the Cubs after they won the first, I actually don't agree with that.
I don't agree with that whatsoever. Like, it's not as high because what's one of the fallbacks that we've spoken about time and time again? Oh, what if Game 7 goes differently? What if the Indians win it in 9 innings? What if the Cubs don't win that game and they don't have the World Series title to their name? Okay, obviously all of history's, at least in the last 3 years of this Cubs thing, is different, but it's also how much of a more of a foot on the gas type of thing is it by Theo to generate a big-time move, to get another big-time player, whatever it might be. I think that that's, you're right when you point out Madden. You're right when you, if you're to examine this roster and complain about the shortcomings of some of the big-name free agents, whether it's the Tyler Chatwoods of the world that earned $39 million, Yu Darvish being a disappointment for a year and 2 or 3 months of the first part of his deal, Jason Hayward coming in, and sure, he was part of the World Series team, but he's been a flop for the vast majority of that contract. Like, there is a ton of pressure on it. This was supposed to be a dynasty. This was supposed to be a team that they told you the plan was bites at the apple or a seat at the table year in and year out. And okay, last year things started to go south and they finished with 95 wins. They didn't win their own division. They didn't get out of the wild card round. This year they take another step back. Like, expectations are still sky high, but the actual performance is not. And that's why you have your frustrations are so high. I don't think there's many out there that look at it and are just, oh yeah, they won in 16, so everything's fine, everything's dandy. I think the majority of fans look at it, and it's, I don't want to say disappointment if they don't win another one, because you didn't win a World Series for 108 years. But
oh, there will be disappointment if they don't win another one.
There's a growing sense of frustration, not even not winning one, but not really even being at the table to win one here the last 2 years now, and looking like it'll likely be the case next year.
Yeah, the Cubs side of this is fairly simple. The hype and the pressure to win is not the same as the first one, but it's still massive.
Mm-hmm.
It's still more than basically any other place in baseball because of the attention and the size of the fandom, right? There's just, they are a media juggernaut.
It's one of the few national brands in Major League Baseball.
Exactly. So is it less than pre-2016? Of course. But is it still massive? Of course. The more interesting side of this, I actually think, is the actual White Sox side of it, because he's right. Samson is right. Tanking wasn't prevalent then, and as an accepted mode of gutting your team in order to win a championship. But there's a huge component of the economic realities of baseball that there are only a few teams that are consistently in the green, right? Like, they're in the black, however you want to define it, making money themselves.
Without the help of MLB Interactive and
the revenue sharing and the media. And that's why the Cubs can have a $217 million payroll and the A's can have an $80 million payroll, right? Because the Cubs can spend that money because they make that money, and so they can put it back into the team. The A's don't make that much money, so in order for them to just break even, they've got to spend less on their payroll and then take in their share of the revenue that's generated by the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Cardinals, the Cubs, the big market teams with huge fan bases. Mm-hmm. So that philosophy under that economic model, of which Jerry Reinsdorf is as historically instrumental in setting up as anybody, right? His role in the 94 strike, his role with some of these media deals. Like, Jerry Reinsdorf has been very, very good for the owners in the business of baseball. He's a legend among baseball owners for that reason. That if you could be in second place, so be good enough for your fans to be invested, so good enough for your fans to go to the game, good enough for your fans to watch, but not spending so much money that all of a sudden you're losing money and all that. So you still get money coming in from revenue sharing, but you make some money because your team's competitive. That's a good business plan in the economic environment that baseball created.
And it's, as a business person, that's phenomenal. As a baseball fan, that's awful. Like, there, you saw the comments and the posts and the writings up of Acuna the other day when he didn't run out the ground ball in Atlanta, or he didn't run out what he thought was a home run, wound up being a single. He would have at least been on second, maybe third base had he run out of the batter's box. And there's this outcry of, oh, that's what's wrong with baseball. That's the issue. It's all about this new kids enjoying the game thing. You're not playing hard. You're not taking the game seriously. That was a non-issue. Obviously, the Braves would be ticked off. Any teammate would be ticked off if that happened in a spring training game, let alone in a game in October in a playoff baseball game. This is a million times bigger issue if you have an owner that actually believes this, though, that says, all right, yeah, well, we're in this to make money. We're not actually in this to seriously care that much about winning. Like, from a fan's perspective, that's a bigger issue with baseball right now, and it's not a Jerry Reinsdorf thing as much as I think that you see it across the league. I think there's a lot of teams that like to see the convenience of the Astros do their rebuild or the Cubs that did their rebuild, and they both won World Series here in the last couple of years. The Royals, before it was the trendy thing to do, you could say that that was largely a rebuild because they were disastrous and awful for so long.
Yeah, of course.
And that's how they got so many of those draft picks and guys that hit and were part of those two teams that went to World Series in back-to-back years. But it's, I think there's a lot of teams and a lot of groups out there that say, oh, it's a rebuild, it's a rebuild. Yeah, we're in this phase, they were in that phase of it. Like, show me what Detroit's actual plan of action is. The Tigers are a team that's probably, I'm sure attendance is incredibly low, but they're making money off of the revenue sharing. They're making money off of all of that. There's no real light at the end of their tunnel of being competitive anytime in the, not even near future, but the down the road future. It doesn't seem like they're loading up on prospects or what their plan is. Kansas City kind of feels the same way right now. You look across baseball, there's probably two teams in damn near every division you can say that to.
What's interesting to me about it is, my opinion of Reinsdorf from afar, not being a fan of the White Sox, but being a diehard Bulls fan, was always that he was so competitive and cared so much about the White Sox that it sometimes came at the expense of the Bulls.
Illich old Red Wings Tigers thing?
That was the perception was is that he would trade the six Bulls championships for the one White Sox World Series and all of that. And so I think that those comments in that time in baseball made sense. And if you applied them to today's game, because tanking is now prevalent, it wouldn't make any sense. But it is interesting that he apparently said the same thing to a player.
Yes.
Like Jack McDowell, who will join us tomorrow at 5:30, based on his comments on Facebook, it seemed like it pissed him off. Why would you tell that to a player who's trying to win a championship that the goal is second place? So that mixed messaging back then, maybe saying it to an executive is one thing, saying it to a player is another, but I've gotten the sense that maybe they're not willing to spend as big a money and they got outbid on Machado and we'll see how they do in this free agency and that sort of thing. But I've always got the sense of the two teams that he owned, the White Sox were the biggest priority because Jerry Reinsdorf loves baseball.
Yeah, it seems like that's what he, if he was actually a fan, not take the businessman aside and actually put fandom in for Jerry Reinsdorf, it seems like everything he ever said, even right after they won the World Series, leading up to the World Series in 05, the quote that you kind of referenced there, if I'd trade six of those rings for one of these rings or six of those trophies for one of this trophy, it does seem like the fan in him, not the businessman, but the actual fan side of him is much more baseball focused than it is basketball focused.
So I'm curious how White Sox fans feel about it. 312-644-6767, because as long as it's not how he's operating today, and you have finally taken the lane of rebuilding and developing prospects, and you are going to spend money this offseason and going forward, I don't think that Sampson's comments matter all of that much in 2019.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear that that's not the way that they function right now, because if that was the way that he functioned, never would have signed off on this rebuild, knowing that fifth place and fourth place finishes for a good half of a decade
exactly.
will come.
Exactly. But now the next part is, and Bernstein said today, like your goal can't be second place because you can't manufacture that. And they haven't been, they've been finishing way worse than second place for the last decade. Now the question is, spend money. Like, are you going to act?
How serious are you going to be about it? Are you going to be cute and show up and say that, yeah, our offer was better? Well, why was your offer better? Because you put a bunch of incentives in there and it wasn't guaranteed money that made it better? Like, that's, guess what? Guaranteed money is what matters, whether it's baseball, football, or whatnot, whatever sport you throw out there. That's what matters. And that was the way the Machado thing ended came off odd, bizarre. I know that was dark days around here because of the disappointment and the letdown and then kind of how everything was handled immediately after.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to be, I don't want to say it's like put up or shut up time, because it's still, I mean, a lot of these free agent contracts, you can get yourself into trouble if you go out and spend like crazy and bring some of these guys in if you're going to pay $275 million for something that's isn't necessarily going to be a hit or you're that sold on. But you also can't act like the you're going to the big boy table and then end up over at the kids' table in the offseason. You can't just have excuses for everything left and right year after year.
Yeah, we'll see if they sit at the big boy table. I'm curious how White Sox fans feel about it. It feels like Cubs fans are supposed to have remorse over something that I just can't relate to at all. We'll get into that. Hub Arcus joining us at 4 o'clock. Shep in for Mac on the Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
His first one to David Torres is lifted to left, sending Cave back to the warning track at the wall. He leaps. It's gone. Gleyber Torres with a solo shot to start the scoring. That is pulled to the right side. Stopped by Torres. Throw to first. In time. What a play on both ends. Torres in short right. LeMahieu on the backhand.
It is Gleyber Day. And he is the Gleyber of the Month.
Gleyber of the Month.
And you wanted to kick me out of the studio when I had the colic ski thing earlier. My goodness.
Yeah, but I have more access to you than I do John Sterling.
Okay, fair enough.
Bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Basketball. Join Northwestern Basketball at the new Welsh Ryan Arena this season. Home opponents include Michigan State, Michigan, and Illinois. Season tickets to see Chicago's Big Ten team on sale at nusports.com. This segment brought to you by Lakeside Bank. Gleyber Torres, as the Yankees swept the Twins, went 3-for-4 with 3 runs scored, 2 doubles, and a homer last night. He's playing his best ball on the biggest stage in the biggest market.
And like a good Gleyber, Torres is there.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
I don't know if I can't stand it or I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
It's one of the two.
That's fair.
Like, it's one or the other. It's either if I'm in the mood for it, that's the best thing going. If I'm not in the mood for it, fire it into the sun.
If he was our guy and it was our team, you'd love it.
If the team was winning. I would absolutely despise that if they were 70-92.
Did you despise Santo when they were bad?
Oftentimes, yes.
You did?
Yes.
Okay.
I just thought the act got a little bit...
Okay, that's fair.
It wore on me at times. Like, all right, you don't have to be cute. You can tell us that this team's a bunch of bums. They're going to lose 100 games again, or they're going to lose 95 games again. You don't have to sugarcoat it.
That's what Stoney was for.
That's true.
I liked that Ron was the homer till the end. Like that, if there's a place for
Forever
it.
Forever optimist, yeah.
Yeah, if there's a place
Pat
for
Ron
it.
Show.
Yeah, exactly. For me growing up, like obviously you know I like analysts who are critical, but the hometown radio announcer with the bias, there is a certain hometown charm to it. But
Ron Santos.
Exactly, but it can be mocked elsewhere.
Made that play. Yeah, he leaped. Some might even say he jumped. He made that play, right, Rom?
When you watch Gleyber Torres, I don't have any seller's remorse. It doesn't bother me that the Cubs traded him for Chapman to win the World Series. That doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah, it's not like a, oh my God, he was a Cub and he should be here doing this. Is there a little bit of remorse? It's like, God, I wish middle infield could use him. Wouldn't be opposed to that.
Oh,
but
of course.
It's also, you can't just throw out, they won the World Series. They don't win that World Series without Aroldis Chapman. Now, if you want to get into discussion of what did they have to give up Torres? Did they have to send him off in order to get Chapman? Could they have waited a couple of days? Was there really another bidder out there for the services of Aroldis Chapman that would have forced your hand to give Torres in order to get him? That might be another discussion. There's not a whole lot else, like big-time prospects that went back to the Yankees in that trade. So does it stink when you see Torres and like, man, he could be here and he could be doing that? Yeah, it stings a little, but you won the damn World Series, and if you didn't have Aroldis Chapman, you weren't winning that World Series.
We'll take these Reinsdorf calls in just a second, but yeah, those two things are not mutually exclusive. Like, would I want Gleyber Torres on the present-day Cubs? Of course. But was that trade absolutely necessary at the time because the only thing that team was lacking was a lights out closer? Of course. So Theo can only make the trade based on the information he has at the time, not based on hindsight. So if that's what it took to get Chapman, that's what it took to get him. And then they won the World Series. Eloy stings a lot more than Gleyber Torres ever will.
Thanks, Cubs.
Exactly.
Does he, though?
Yes, that one is the one that's going to sting, because you could talk yourself.
Because you're going to be reminded of it every day?
You're reminded of it every day. It happened after they had already won. You could talk yourself into, Quintana hasn't been good. Like, Chapman was great for the Cubs. You could talk yourself into, if they would have gone a different way, maybe they could have gotten Verlander. Like, there were other options available, right? Among Arrieta and Darvish and Verlander and Quintana.
That's where it stings for me.
It wasn't necessary.
Right. You jumped at the All-Star game and made that splash and made that move for Jose Quintana when there were other arms that wound up being available. Now, does it help that Justin Verlander goes to Houston and goes from being, was still putting up solid numbers in Detroit, even though he was playing for a garbage team at the time. He goes from that to being Cy Young Justin Verlander all of a sudden. Not all of a sudden, but he continues to be that well into his 30s, into his mid to now late 30s. Like, that's the part that stings to me, because I thought Verlander was going to be a Cub. He's tweeting during the World Series in 2016, oh my God, that atmosphere, look at that, how great would it be to play here? All that's the part that stings. I don't know. The part that worries me, not worries me, but would bother me more, it's like, okay, if you have to give up Eloy in order to get that trade for Quintana, yeah, that part sucks. I'm worried about, like, Dylan Cease being the one finally piece that the Cubs were able to draft, partially develop, and if he turns into something of significance at the major league level, there's your pitcher in the minor leagues that your organization simply has not had since this regime took over, and you traded him for a guy that's been a little bit above average since
sure.
You got him.
That trade as a whole is the one that I think you're going to regret, and I'm surprised. Like, there's a bunch of texters who are coming in and saying, yeah, but you sacrificed Gleyber Torres to win one World Series, and if you would have had Gleyber, you could have been better positioned to win multiple World Series.
I don't know if I buy that, though, because your pitching is still going to be in shambles like it is right now. Your pitching is going to be a ton of questions. John Lester is going to be a year older going into next year. That team was the closest thing. Not that anything in baseball is ever a sure bet, but that's as sure of a bet as you're ever going to have. That's as nice of a hand as you're ever going to be holding entering the end of July and saying, all right, what can we sprinkle on top here to increase our chances even a couple of percentage points? That was the move they made. They don't make that move, they don't win the World Series. And as a result, like, I can't sit here and be upset about Gleyber Torres turning into a star 3 years later. Gleyber Torres was 19 when he was traded. How many times do we hear this 19-year-old is going to be the next big thing? This 19-year-old is going to be, man, when he hits the major leagues, it's going to be a decade and a half of dominance. You hear it about guy after guy after guy. So few actually pan out that, okay, if that's what the Yankees were asking for, if that's what you had to give up, you won a damn World Series, a team that hadn't won one in 108 years, and you can't just look past it and be like, okay, could have won multiple ones with Gleyber here. You don't know that. Like, you have to win your first one before you win a bunch of them.
They did say Gleyber was pretty great at the time. I don't know if they were just, like, selling it ahead of time to up his value, but, baseball industry was starting to talk about Gleyber before he got dealt. But looking back at 2016, what do you do with Gleyber Torres? You have, before you knew the things you knew about Addison Russell, he was a World Series hero at the time. You have Baez. Gleyber didn't have any place to play if you're talking about 2017 Cubs.
Well,
that's a big problem, So, like, you have to look at it in that lens as well.
Yeah, there's that, and that's why also the Eloy trade, the Eloy part of it doesn't bother me as much because, yes, Jason Hayward's been a bust of a signing, but where does he play if he's in a Cubs uniform? You simply don't have a spot for him right now because Schwarber's in left, Hayward's in right. Eloy might be a fantastic bat for a damn long time. It appears that at least to start, seems like it's going to be that way, but there's not a spot for him right now just because of the way kind of contracts are put together on that team.
Yeah, I think that's fair, but to me, it's the result. Like, whatever you needed to do to win that first World Series,
you do,
and then you deal with the fallout. The Quintana trade, you haven't won big since you got him, and Cease, Eloy, everything, you're going to be reminded of it constantly if and when those guys hit, because it's in the same side of town. But watching Gleyber Torres play well for the Yankees, like, good. That'll just help Theo make future trades because it'll show that guys who come up through that pipeline are good players and he can evaluate top prospects. Like, that, it honestly doesn't bother me 1%.
Yeah. I mean, I wish there were more Gleyber Torreses in this system.
Of course.
I wish that he wasn't like the one that you looked at and like, there's the guy that's been developed by this organization in the last 4 years or so. Wish there were a few more of those. But yeah, you won the World Series. Like, it's, I get it. 3 years later, and after the disappointment of this year, it stings and it's, oh God, yeah, that guy was a former Cub. You won the World. Like, were Cubs fans upset because Joe Carter hit a walk-off home run to clinch a World Series? You got Rick Sutcliffe that helped pitch you to a couple division titles and win a damn Cy Young Award. Like, you don't. I can't sit
they
here
won
and be
the World
upset.
Series.
Correct.
They won the World Series.
I just wish they would have won the World Series in 2015 because then maybe the Sox could have got Torres too.
God, you're so proud of yourself. Did you hear the little snicker to himself that he had?
It was only to match your...
Yeah, fair. It was visceral reactions for both of us.
That's why I said earlier that Tanny, like James Harden, when the NBA needs people to just, you know, smooth things over with China and just completely speak out of their rear end. And
he's our ambassador.
He's our ambassador for the White Sox. Of no matter what needs to be said, you need to feel good about the Sox. Tanny's our fallback on that. He'll always leave you smiling if you're a Sox fan.
Chris Rodman Tannehill over there. Carl in Berwyn wants to weigh in on Reinsdorf. What's up, Carl?
Yes, I just wanted to say I think Jerry Reinsdorf is a very smart owner, and I really believe that this year the White Sox in the offseason are going to spend a lot of money on free agents. What I think they need to get is a real good starting pitcher, another starting pitcher that can have an ERA of around four, maybe win 10, 12 games, but get eat up innings. And I think they're going to go after a big-time right fielder and maybe a DH. And I expect this team, with the core that they already have now and with the emergence of Kopech coming back, Rodon coming back, Mandrell coming up, and Luis Roberts going into center field, that this team is going to win. I think they're going to go win about 95 games next year.
95 games.
All right, Chris Tannehill, you've been unseated
really
as our Sox optimist.
Take a big swing next year. And Rick Hahn is going to be praised in this town for being a great general manager. And Abreu is going to become another big poppy. Thank you.
Thank you, Carl. Abreu is going to be big poppy.
My goodness.
95
we found
wins.
Rick Hahn's burner account calling the score on a Tuesday afternoon.
Carl.
Holy smokes.
Coming in
95
hot.
Wins. Jumping up 20, was it 72 wins this year? Jumping up 23 wins?
That's crazy. I mean, my early projections say 92 to 93.
I was going to say, like 20 is understandable, but 23 more. You just adding a guy with a 4 ERA is the plan. That's what's going to put it over the top. Questions about this team or this rebuild? Who's going to get outs next year, I guess, is my biggest concern. You have Giolito. This year was phenomenal for him.
Yeah.
You had Ronaldo Lopez, where it was
inconsistent, but a very high ceiling.
Ceiling
flashed.
Is extremely
high. No,
he's
ready high. To work. He keeps saying, I'm ready. I'm ready. And then he goes out and gets shelled the next outing.
But then it's like Kopech coming off of an arm injury. You have Carlos Rodon, who hasn't been able to put it all together, has been banged up as well. And it's like, I just don't know if they're going to make this jump. Who's getting all these outs for this team? And that's where I get worried about the state of things right now. Not to say that it can't be addressed free agent-wise or in trades.
Let's go to Kevin in Palatine on the score. What's up, Kevin?
Hey, afternoon, guys. I have a slightly contrarian view to the last caller. So
the Sox aren't going to win 95 games?
No, the smart owner has owned the team since 1981. They made the playoffs four times. They've never made the playoffs in back-to-back years. They've never had sustained success. What they have is, and there's nothing shocking about these words, he is absolutely as concerned about the bottom line as winning, and then winning has never been the most important thing to him. And as far as that last guy, anyone that thinks Carlos Rodon is going to get one win for that team next year, Cease had almost a 7 ERA, and we're booking on Ronaldo Lopez. If they win 82 games, it'll be a freaking miracle. But how could you say a guy's a smart owner when they've never made the playoffs 2 years in a row? It's almost statistically impossible. They've been a freaking dumpster fire.
Well, and
everyone wants to kiss this guy's ass. They've
stuck. This is awesome. We should take calls more often.
Well, it could be somewhere in the middle, right? It's possible that they're not an absolute dumpster fire and that the rebuild isn't going to crash and burn. And they're also, the odds are drastically stacked against them winning 95 wins and everybody hitting. Most rebuilds fail.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reality. Mm-hmm. And when you don't have a ton of money to spend, your margin for error is so much less that the odds are the White Sox rebuild will fall short of a World Series. That's just the mathematical odds of this this thing.
Yeah, the Cubs damn near fell short of a World Series. As dominating as that 2016 team was, as good a team as we've ever seen in this town, that came within
and with as much money to spend as anybody in the sport.
Sure, but the thing I will say to that caller's point that I think that often gets overlooked because of the Twins in the 2000s, they were run and operated so well. All the Indians of the 90s, those Indians teams, they were operated so well. You don't really say it for an extended amount of time about the Royals. The Tigers had their little flash there from about 06 through 2012, 2013 before it went south for them. But I will say this about the Sox. This has been a division that has been waited to be taken over. It's been a bad division. Like, you look in the American League, it's damn near impossible to compete year in and year out. What the Rays do on a yearly basis, competing with Boston, competing with New York, year in, year out, being a playoff team, being a playoff contender, that's unbelievable because they're going against two of the highest spending teams, two of the teams that produce talent in their minor leagues year after year after year after year, and they compete and they go to the playoffs with regularity. There's not that organization in the American League Central. Like, if there's one division that has been lacking that for the longest amount of time, it has been the American League Central since 1994 when this whole realignment started. And the Sox, to that caller's point, have never been a team that goes to the playoffs back-to-back years, have never been a team that is the model of consistency, never been a team that's a model of, all right, they're knocking on the door for another playoff appearance, another playoff run here. And I think that it especially, you can kind of put a light on that when you look at who are the teams that they have to beat each year. It's not like they're going against the teams that you think are traditionally run and operated on this next level. There's no Houston Astros of today in that division. There's no Los Angeles Dodgers. There's no New York Yankees or Boston Red Sox. It's there for the taking, and it's like they've had no interest in doing so.
Hub joins us in 15 minutes, one of the few celebrity birthdays I actually care about, coming up on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
This is Teddy KGB's place.
500.
You won't find it in the yellow pages. He doesn't look like much, but KGB is connected all the way to the top of the Russian mob. He's the one guy in the game you don't want to with. But if you're looking for high stakes, this is the only place in town. They all know me as a small-timer, but that's about to change. The game in question is No Limit Texas Hold'em. Minimum buy-in, $25,000. A game like this doesn't come together often outside the casinos. The stakes attract rich flounders, and they in turn attract the sharks.
Mob.
Happy birthday to me and to you.
Happy 49th birthday to Matt Damon, the actor who, I would say, has the most watchable filmography of any actor.
That's a Hawk Harrelson category if I've ever heard one.
The most good movies. You know, Tom Hanks, Denzel. You know, you could argue Daniel Day-Lewis, more gifted actors, more gifted thespians, but who makes the most good movies? Give me someone who makes more good movies than Matt Damon.
I think Tom Hanks. I think you said it.
Maybe.
What dud has Tom Hanks had? Maybe he's not working quite as much now as he used to be, but it's pretty much if Tom Hanks is in something, I'm going to sit down and I'm probably going to enjoy it, but Matt Damon's towards the top of that list, no doubt about it.
I love Damon, man.
Well, it's because some of your all-time favorites he's the star of.
Good Will Hunting and Rounders are two of my absolute favorites.
That's probably on your movie Mount Rushmore, both of them, I would think.
You talk about a higher hit rate. Maybe Leo's got a higher hit rate, but he doesn't have the catalog.
Correct.
He doesn't have as many films.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Damon has flops, no question about it. But if I'm giving you the Bourne movies, I'm giving you the Oceans movies, I'm giving you Departed, I'm giving you Good Will Hunting, I'm giving you The Martian, I'm giving you Rounders, I'm giving you Talented Mr. Ripley, I'm giving you Saving Private Ryan, and
Eurotrip.
He's also funny. Like, when he does funny, like his Entourage cameo,
sure.
Funny. His stuff with Jimmy Kimmel and Ben Affleck and, like, the feud there, funny. Jay and Silent Bob, funny. Like, he has that ability. He's mostly drama, obviously, but Matt Damon. There was just a story that came out about him that James Cameron was such a big fan, he wanted to work with him, so he offered Damon the main voice for the main character in Avatar. And Cameron, you know, he's only made, like, six or seven movies ever. And so Damon was really interested in working with James Cameron because he's a legend in the business. And Cameron, to try to get, he's like, listen, I don't need a name actor for this, but I'd love to work with you, offered him 10% equity in the profits of Avatar. Damon was making one of the Bourne movies, so he had to turn it down. Would have been about $250 million.
Good Lord.
$250 million.
Yeah, I mean, that's big money for even Matt Damon. Like,
yes,
I'm sure
it
that like, Matt Damon's not struggling. Matt Damon's doing just fine, but it's huge money still for Matt Damon. I think if I had to take a movie of like, my favorite role of Matt Damon in any movie, I have to go Team America World Police.
Great movie.
Thought his role in that was played to a T. Absolutely phenomenal.
Great movie. And listen, now everyone's coming in with all the different ones for texters, and of course, it's subjective. It's subjective, but you're giving me a Mount Rushmore of an actor, and you're giving me Rounders, Good Will Hunting, The Martian, and The Departed. That is
never saw The Martian.
So good.
Is it that good?
It is so
good. Like,
I've
seen the other three. All three are great. If you're saying that The Martian's like on par with that, then I guess I do have to check that out. Shocking to you, I'm sure, that I didn't see The Martian. I hadn't seen Avatar yet either.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise
Mac
me.
Mac would be stunned, I'm sure, to learn that.
I find The Martian to be everything you want in a movie. Suspenseful, dramatic, funny, rewatchable, quotable.
Funny, huh?
Yeah.
Like, because every trailer I ever saw for it or promo for it, I never thought funny would be used to describe what The Martian is.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like a funny, like, huh? Really left the theater laughing at that one.
It was. It was. Really? I think it was actually, like, controversially nominated in a comedy category in one of the movie awards. It absolutely has funny movie moments in it. Hanks is a good cop.
Yeah, I think Hanks is my go-to. Who else would be on that list? Tanny was right about Leo. Maybe the depth isn't as much, but like where Leo's great, Leo is as good as anyone. Denzel. I was never as big a Denzel guy. I like watching the short Denzel clips.
I think you throw in Harrison Ford, too, just because he's got Indiana Jones, Star Wars, and then obviously Mark Grody's favorite movie, The Fugitive.
Forgot Air Force One.
Air Force One, too.
Harrison Ford's got a big top four. There's no question about it. Hub Arkish coming up on, honestly, I'm going to ask him just either ors. Would he rather have Trubisky or Baker? Trubisky, Josh Allen, Trubisky, and just go through the list rapid fire and see how he ranks the young quarterbacks compared to Mitch. Coming up on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.